You're listening to A People's Anthology. Produced by Boston Review, this is a new podcast that highlights and explores radical texts from US history, with our first six episodes surfacing a few important documents related to the urban rebellions of the 1960s and 70s. The next six episodes focus on a range of figures, from Claudia Jones to the Cumbahee River Collective. What ties the works together is that they are all, in our judgment, important contributions to the era of social upheaval in cities during the latter half of the 20th century. The texts touch on racism, incarceration, housing struggles, feminism, communism, and more. In each episode, I'll introduce the text with the help of historians and researchers close to each topic. Then we'll hear the text itself, performed by some of our favorite poets and scholars. I'm your host, Rosie, and I hope you'll stick around and join the book club. This is episode one, on Claudia Jones's 1949 essay, An End to the Neglect of the Problems of the Negro Woman, introduced and read by Carol Boyce Davies.
So I was just teaching a class where we showed the Karl Marx site and her next to it, and it never fails to blow students' mind away that she is right there and next left of Marx, as I call her. Her life and her experience position her in a way that was able to take ideas that were pretty consistently articulated in the Communist Party and then make them palatable for black women, workers, black people. And this positions her then, in my view, left of Karl Marx, where she is buried in Highgate Cemetery, London.
One of the key figures in black feminist communist thought, Claudia Jones was born in 1915 in Porto, Spain, Trinidad and Tobago. Moving to New York just in time for middle school, she grew up in Harlem during its famed Renaissance, when a social and cultural explosion turned the area into a black cultural mecca.
And at the age of 18, is exposed to amazing street corner discussions about the Scottsboro Boys, who were a group of young black men who were tried for raping two young white women on a boxcar of a train. This turned out to be not true, of course, and they eventually were exonerated. But the Communist Party was very active in their defense, and as a result, there was an amazing discussion around them, which actually influenced many people, including people like Rosa Parks, to become active. So Claudia joins the Communist Party then, and she's about 18 or 19 years old. And because of this active involvement from such a young age, she becomes visible to U.S. surveillance structures, particularly the FBI, which then begins to look at her more closely. So because of this, she's never able to gain citizenship in the United States.
In the words of Jones herself, it was her working-class poverty and Jim Crow experiences that led her to, quote, the philosophy of my life, the science of Marxism-Leninism. That philosophy that not only rejects racist ideas, but is the antithesis of them. But she also thought that the Communist Party's position on race and class was lacking. She opposed the leadership of the party, accusing them of following a, quote, pious hope, that equality would be legislated through reforms on top. Jones, alongside people like Harry Haywood, advocated for freedom as well as land for the black nation, not just integration. This philosophy, a combination of black nationalism and Leninism, which would return in the 60s with groups like the Black Panthers, is what makes this text a starting point on the topic of urban rebellions. Jones argued that, because black women experienced a triple oppression along lines of race, class, and gender, it would be through their liberation that all would be liberated. Jones advocated for black women to take up the most advanced positions of leadership in the Communist Party.
And this would be one of the reasons then that when she is eventually arrested and tried for having communist ideas because of a piece she wrote called International Women's Day and the Struggle for Peace, she is actually imprisoned in Virginia and then in the same prison, actually, that Billie Holiday would also be imprisoned subsequently, and also Martha Stewart way down the line.
Jones was eventually incarcerated for a year and a day, but actually only served 10 months. In December 1955, 5 weeks after she came out of prison, Jones was deported from the United States and arrived in London that same month after 350 people came to see her off. It was here in London that Jones created Britain's first major black newspaper, the West Indian Gazette, which survives to this day, and she also founded the iconic Notting Hill Carnival. Jones was also a writer and contributed essays on black, communist, feminist thought to Marxist publications like Political Affairs. It was in their pages that she published An End to the Neglect of the Problems of the Negro Woman in 1949.
I think that's one of the pieces, according to one of my colleagues who is producing a book on black feminism, she actually wants to date black feminist thought from that particular essay. And one could, of course, take it back further to Harriet Tubman and to the activism of some of the figures who actually talked about enslavement in different kinds of ways, or even Ida B. Wells. But she wants to look at that particular essay itself as sort of giving this sort of theoretical grounding for putting together questions that became central to black feminist theorizing that would include race, gender, and class in particular. So then by the time we get to Angela Davis, who actually would write a book titled Woman, Race, and Class, you could see then that Claudia Jones, who Angela actually cites as influential, was already putting together that in that particular essay. So I think if we want to talk about a theoretical positioning, it would be precisely that. So it's coming out or generated by her study and her knowledge of class as it comes out of the Communist Party, but more at the level of application and more at the level of trying to see how then one could take those theoretical positions, even as Marx argued, and then make them workable in another kind of context. And to me, that would be her major contribution there. And particularly in there, she defines the super exploitation of the black woman, again, taking classic Marxist thought around surplus value, exchange value, use value, and then saying that while workers are exploited in terms of their class positioning in society, that there are other class fractions then which have the capability of further exploiting other groups. And in this particular case, then, she breaks down the location of black women, particularly black women working as domestic workers, black women working in service work, as she did at one point in her life and her mother did as well, and how then they are able to find ways to live in a society which operates on the basis of exploiting their labor in multiple ways. So the black women are super exploited for her. They are exploited in terms of their class, but also in terms of their gender, but in terms of their class, race, and gender. An End to the Neglect of the Problems of Negro Women, 1949. An outstanding feature of the present stage of the Negro liberation movement is the growth in the militant participation of Negro women in all aspects of the struggle for peace, civil rights, and economic security. Symptomatic of this new militancy is the fact that Negro women have become symbols of many present-day struggles of the Negro people. The growth of militancy among Negro women has profound meaning both for the Negro liberation movement and for the emerging anti-fascist, anti-imperialist coalition. Key issues of struggle. There are many key issues facing Negro women around which struggles can and must be waged. But none so dramatizes the oppressed status of Negro womanhood as does the case of Rosalie Ingram, widowed Negro mother of 14 children, two of them dead, who faces life imprisonment in a Georgia jail for defending herself from the indecent advances of a white supremacist. The Ingram case illustrates the landless, Jim Crow oppressed status of the Negro family in America. It illumines particularly the degradation of Negro women today under American bourgeois democracy, moving to fascism and war. It reflects the daily insults to which Negro women are subjected in public places, no matter what their class, status, or position. It exposes the hypocritical alibi of the lynchers of Negro manhood who have historically hidden behind the skirts of white women when they try to cover up their foul crimes with the chivalry of protecting white womanhood. But white women today, no less than their sisters in the abolitionist and suffrage movements, must rise to challenge this lie and the whole system of Negro oppression. American history is rich in examples of the cost to the democratic rights of both women and men of failure to wage this fight. The suffragists, during their first jailing, were purposely placed on cots next to Negro prostitutes to humiliate them. They had the wisdom to understand that the intent was to make it so painful that no woman would dare to fight for her rights if she had to face such consequences. But it was the historic shortcoming of the women suffrage leaders, predominantly drawn as they were from the bourgeoisie and the petty bourgeoisie, that they failed to link their own struggle to the struggles for the full democratic rights of the Negro people following emancipation. A developing consciousness on the woman question today, therefore, must not fail to recognize that the Negro question in the United States is prior to and not equal to the woman question. That only to the extent that we fight all chauvinist expressions and actions as regards the Negro people and fight for the full equality of the Negro people can women as a whole advance their struggle for equal rights. For the progressive women's movement, the Negro woman who combines in her status the worker, the Negro, and the woman is the vital link to this heightened political consciousness. To the extent further that the cause of the Negro woman worker is promoted, she will be enabled to take her rightful place in the Negro proletarian leadership of the National Liberation Movement and by her active participation contribute to the entire American working class whose historic mission is the achievement of a socialist America, the final and full guarantee of woman's emancipation. The fight for Rosa Lee Ingram's freedom is a challenge to all white women and to all progressive forces who must begin to ask themselves, how long shall we allow this dastardly crime against all womanhood, against the Negro people, to go unchallenged? Rosa Lee Ingram's plight and that of her sisters also carries with it a challenge to progressive cultural workers to write and sing of the Negro woman in her full courage and dignity. The recent establishment of the National Committee to Free the Ingram Family fulfills a need long felt since the early movement, which forced commutation to life imprisonment of Mrs. Ingram's original sentence of execution. One of the first steps of the committee was the visit of a delegation of Negro and white citizens to this courageous militant Negro mother imprisoned in a Georgia cell. The measure of support was so great that the Georgia authorities allowed the delegation to see her unimpeded. Since that time, however, in retaliation against the developing mass movement, the Georgia officials have moved Mrs. Ingram, who is suffering from severe heart condition, to a worse penitentiary at Reidsville. The struggle for jobs for Negro women is a prime issue. The growing economic crisis with its mounting unemployment and wage cuts and increasing evictions is making its impact felt most heavily on the Negro masses. In one Negro community after another, Negro women, the last to be hired and the first to be fired, are the greatest sufferers from unemployment. Struggles must be developed to win jobs for Negro women in basic industry, in the white-collar occupations, in the communities, and in private utilities. The successful campaign of the Communist Party in New York's East Side to win jobs for Negro women in the five and dime stores has led to the hiring of Negro women throughout the city, even in predominantly white communities. This campaign has extended to New England and must be waged elsewhere. Close to 15 government agencies do not hire Negroes at all. This policy gives official sanction to and at the same time further encourages the pervasive Jim Crow policies of the capitalist exploiters. A campaign to win jobs for Negro women here would thus greatly advance the whole struggle for jobs for Negro men and women. In addition, it would have a telling effect in exposing the hypocrisy of the Truman administration's civil rights program. A strong fight will also have to be made against the growing practice of the United States Employment Service to shunt Negro women, despite their qualifications for other jobs, only into domestic and personal service work. Where consciousness of the special role of Negro women exists, successful struggle can be initiated, which will win the support of white workers. A recent example was the initiative taken by white communist garment workers in a shop employing 25 Negro women, where three machines were idle. The issue of upgrading Negro women workers became a vital one. A boycott movement has been initiated, the white workers refusing to adhere to strict seniority at the expense of Negro workers. Similarly, in a Packard UAW local in Detroit, a fight for the maintenance of women in industry and for the upgrading of 750 women, the large majority of whom were Negro, was recently won. The struggle for peace. Winning the Negro woman for the struggle for peace is decisive for all other struggles. Even during the anti-Axis war, Negro women had to weep for their soldier sons lynched while serving in a Jim Crow army. Are they therefore not interested in the struggle for peace? The efforts of the bipartisan war makers to gain the support of the women's organizations in general have influenced many Negro women's organizations, which at their last annual conventions adopted foreign policy stance favoring the Marshall Plan and Truman Doctrine. Many of these organizations have worked with groups having outspoken anti-imperialist positions. That there is a profound peace sentiment among Negro women which can be mobilized for effective action is shown not only in the magnificent response to the meetings of Eslander Good Robeson, but also in the position announced last year by the oldest Negro women's organization under the leadership of Mrs. Christine C. Smith in urging a national mobilization of American Negro women in support of the United Nations. In this connection, it will be very fruitful to bring to our country a consciousness of the magnificent struggle of women in North Africa who, though lacking in the most elementary material needs, have organized a strong movement for peace and thus stand united against a third world war with 81 million women in 57 nations in the Women's International Democratic Federation. Our party, based on its Marxist-Leninist principles, stands foursquare on a program of full economic, political, and social equality for the Negro people and of equal rights for women. Who, more than the Negro woman, the most exploited and oppressed, belongs in our party? Negro women can and must make an enormous contribution to the daily life and work of the party. Concretely, this means prime responsibility lies with white men and women comrades. Negro men comrades, however, must participate in this task. Negro communist women must everywhere now take their rightful place in party leadership on all levels. The strong capacities, militancy, and organizational talents of Negro women can, if well utilized by our party, be a powerful lever for bringing forward Negro workers, men and women, as the leading forces of the Negro People's Liberation Movement for cementing Negro and white unity in the struggle against Wall Street imperialism and for rooting the party amongst the most exploited and oppressed sections of the working class and its allies. In our party clubs, we must conduct an intense discussion of the role of the Negro woman so as to equip our party membership with clear understanding for undertaking the necessary struggles in the shops and communities. We must end the practice in which many Negro women who join our party and who in their churches, communities, and fraternal groups are leaders of masses with an invaluable mass experience to give our party, suddenly find themselves involved in our clubs, not as leaders, but as people who have to, quote, get their feet wet, unquote, organizationally. We must end this failure to create an atmosphere in our clubs in which new recruits, in this case Negro women, are confronted with the silent treatment or with attempts to blueprint them into a pattern. In addition to the white chauvinist implications in such approaches, these practices confuse the basic need for Marxist-Leninist understanding, which our party gives to all workers, and which enhances their political understanding with chauvinist disdain for the organizational talents of Negro members or for the necessity to promote them into leadership. To win the Negro woman for full participation in the anti-fascist, anti-imperialist coalition, to bring her militancy and participation to even greater heights in the current and future struggles against Wall Street imperialism, progressives must acquire political consciousness as regards her special oppressed status. It is this consciousness accelerated by struggles that will convince increasing thousands that only the Communist Party as the vanguard of the working class with its ultimate perspective of socialism can achieve for the Negro woman, for the entire Negro people, the full equality and dignity of their stature in a socialist society in which contributions to society are measured not by national origin or by color, but a society in which men and women contribute according to ability and ultimately under communism receive according to their needs.
You've been listening to episode 1 of A People's Anthology, featuring excerpts from Claudia Jones's essay, An End to the Neglect of the Problems of the Negro Woman. The text was read and introduced by Carol Boyce Davies, author of Left of Karl Marx, The Political Life of Black Communist Claudia Jones. Our theme music is by Marissa Anderson. A People's Anthology is a production from Boston Review, a political and literary magazine, both online and in print, since 1975. Visit us at bostonreview.net.